The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, Nerdapalooza, the world's largest nerd music festival, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Hello, Nerdy Show listeners. Guess what? You're listening to the Nerdy Show. I just told you that. You must be pretty smart. Well, you're listening to the Nerdy Show, so keep listening. Or not.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap, and this week, things got fucked up. What I mean by that is that due to a scheduling hiccup and all the myriad crazy things going on, we can't bring you the episode that we plan to bring you today, so instead, we've got another two-pack of microsodes. Unexpected, but at no real cost, because we have two microsodes smashed together here, which I think you will find quite the delightful bite-sized podcast programming. Microsodes are where we talk about something that you want us to talk about for 15 to 30 minutes. We're a listener-supported podcast, and all you dear listeners make this podcast and the rest of the shows in the network possible. And every time the cumulative donations pass $100 mark, the person who pushes us over the edge, they get a microsode. They decide what we'll talk about for 15 to 30 minutes. First up, we're going to be talking about MechWarrior. And then, we're going to be talking about Nerdy Show's favorite meldings of science fiction and fantasy. This past weekend, we had our Nerdy Show Kyle MacLachlan movie marathon, where we watched 12 hours of films and television, all featuring actor Kyle MacLachlan. We watched a few episodes of Twin Peaks, Blue Velvet, Dune, the extended cut, even though it's not David Lynch's preferred version of the film, so much so he took his name off of it. Justice League New Frontier, where Kyle MacLachlan voiced Superman, and also 1994's live-action Flintstones movie. It was quite the event from noon to midnight. We weren't certain that we were going to be able to do it, so we kind of announced it a little bit late, but even still, we had an incredible number of people on the stream watching the films along with us, joining in with us in the commentary, and we had an absolute blast. Looking forward to more movie marathons in the future with you guys, and thanks to everybody for coming out. Over at Nerdy Show, we're getting things in gear for the gauntlet of Heroes Con followed by E3. At Heroes Con, we're going to be moderating some panels. I'll be there, Aaron will be there, Eric and Brian from Flame On, also Tony, and we're going to be moderating the panels for Dark Horse, Image, one of their cover panels, Kickstarter, Green Lantern, and also I will be hosting the Atomic Robo Nuts and Bolts panel with our very own Brian Clevenger and Atomic Robo co-creator and artist Scott Wegner. So if you live anywhere near Charlotte, North Carolina, you should head on over, because it is going to be a blast. And then I'll be flying off to Los Angeles from Charlotte to meet up with our live producer John Laval, Brandon, Jonna, and Matt, where we're going to be covering E3. We'll be streaming along with you guys during all the major press conferences, including Xbox, EA, Sony, and others, and also getting coverage from the floor with interviews and hands-on stuff, offering up a perspective that you're not going to find anywhere else, because most people who cover E3 simply don't cover it like we do. They don't look for the same under-the-radar sort of games, and they don't ask the same sort of nerdy fan questions that we do. So if you've got something you'd like us to look out for, just post at the E3 page on the Nerdy Show forums. There'll be a link to it on this episode's page. You'll hear more from me later, but right now, let's talk about MechWarrior. Hey guys, welcome to another Nerdy Show microsode. Hi, I'm Cap.
I'm Tony, why not?
I'm Brandon.
I'm Jonna.
I'm Luke.
And this microsode, we're going to be talking about MechWarrior and the Battletech universe.
Ah yes, the MechWarrior, where the ancient rabbis of days gone by would attack their enemies with matzo balls.
I love Mecha Warrior.
Brandon, you're Jewish. Is that prejudice? Is he being anti-Semitic? What is that?
Is it the answer to your question Islam? Is possibly.
Don't you talk down on what I'm saying, son, or I'll kill you with a dreidel.
Okay, Jewish people invented robots, hence the golem, so it's only natural that Mech Warrior would be the natural evolution of the golem. Done! I made that connection.
It works now, okay. This microsode was requested by Trench88, and it had requested hosts. You know, this is something you can do with the microsodes. You can decide which host you want to lead the discussion, which can either be humorous or disastrous, depending on the circumstances.
Usually disastrous.
Both of those.
Yeah, possibly. The requested hosts were Brandon and Luke.
I don't know why. Yeah,
neither does anybody at this table.
Okay.
We are like C-list on this show.
I know. I don't know what the deal is. But
depending on the episode, you're definitely A-list on the Pokemon episodes.
Aw. Well, what's your guys' relationship with MechWarrior or Battletech?
Well, our status on Facebook has changed to open. So that's my relationship.
I was wondering about that. What's going on there?
Yeah. So we're
are you getting inside other people's cockpits?
Oh yes, we are. Just the tip. So okay. Well, I want to ask Luke. Luke, you downloaded MechWarrior Online, did you not?
I did when it went free to play, or when it came out.
Yeah, it's still. I mean, it's still free to play.
Yeah, you just had to buy stuff.
So what? Yeah, you can, but what, you can also earn in-game money to use instead, which takes a hell of a lot longer. What was your experience when you first started playing the game?
I don't know if I've told this story on the show yet, but I'm going to tell it.
Please.
I got into the mech. I started charging towards the enemy. I fired everything all at once because that's what I like to do. And then my mech started overheating, and then my laptop overheated and shut down.
It's a very realistic game.
So it was life imitating art.
Yes.
It was. And the game itself is gorgeous, but I have to put my laptop on top of a box fan in order for it to run it. So I haven't had the chance to play it very much.
Have you attempted with a freezer? Just to put the laptop in a freezer.
I want to work out this thing where I put my laptop inside of a dorm fridge and just have a monitor on top of it. I feel like I could achieve supercomputing.
See, now, the reason I suck at MechWarrior, maybe you do too, I don't know, is because I also like to fire all of my weapons at once.
Yes.
There's no way to not overheat. So what I did was, you can spend real money buying these awesome mechs, but you can also just play the game a lot, earn the money yourself, and buy it. So I spent like 30 hours saving up for this one mech that can move like 70 miles an hour and has two lasers, right? But it has enough spots for like 12 lasers. So I put 12 of the strongest lasers I can on it, as many heat sinks as possible. He ends up only being able to move to like 20 kph, so he's like moving 1 foot and then landing and then 1 foot. But when I see an enemy, I fire all at once and I usually miss. And then my heat gauge goes up, and then I shut down for a second, and then I power back up, and then fire again.
That sounds
awful. That's fun for me. I like it, because when I do hit someone, they're like, holy shit, my arm blew off.
And actually, my only experience with MechWarrior, really, I've downloaded MechWarrior Online, but I haven't had a chance to really sink into
fun.
It.
It's fun.
I believe it, but I used to play the older versions of the game, and I had no idea what the fuck I was doing, because this was right when I was getting into PC gaming. So
yes, my first experience was with MechWarrior 2. Is it the same for you?
Yeah.
I believe so. I have no idea what number was attached to
That's
it. All I remember is
Do you remember
walking
the Star
around.
Wolves and the Jade Falcon?
Yes.
No. All I remember, and I remember walking around, having no idea how to do things, eventually figuring out how to fire, running out of ammunition, and then being shot by everybody else I was playing with.
That's,
so
yeah.
it was an excellent metaphor for what to expect in my life going forward, where I blow everything that I have and get ridiculed for it. But it was, I got in love, I just fell in love with the mechs, with the idea.
Oh, the customization and everything is brilliant. I never actually played it online until the online one, which is great. It's wonky, and it's got some bugs, and the menu layout is weird, but it's a really fun game when you get it working.
It was one of those where that kind of led into, for me, liking Armored Core down the line, which is a simplified version of it.
It's like MechWarrior, but you can just play it with a gamepad, and there's not
that
many controls.
And you can see it in the third person, where that's like, oh boy, I'm playing anime.
And look, I put like paint on mine, and I can see it. Yeah,
yeah, it was
actually
fun.
Those two games provide a good kind of contrast between the two types of mechs that you see and stuff, which is there's the east, let's call it Eastern and Western. Eastern mechs, which are like Gundams, and they're really nimble and fast, and the Armored Core mechs are the same. And then you have your BattleTech Universe mechs, which are more like tanks, and they function like that. They're big, slow, and they can be pretty fast, but they're mostly slow and clunky.
Yeah, they have like laser swords.
They operate like giant machines.
Giant, yeah, exactly.
Which is what's fun about warriors. Kind of what I've liked about it since MechWarrior 2 is it feels like driving a giant machine, that you have control over all these different subsystems, and you can shut the whole thing down to make your heat go down, or you can power it back up, and
the new online game is that you can, if you see a shit ton of enemies, there's this thing called like spotting, where if you target an enemy for long enough, the rest of your team can see it. But if you like power down, you can shut down wherever.
Mm-hmm.
They can't see you. And I've waited like behind a tree for enemies to come by me. And then I power up and shoot like all 12 of my lasers. Sometimes I blow up because my mech can't handle it, and I just lose like my leg and stand there. But sometimes I hit them and they're like, what the fuck? And then all their friends kill me. But it was great for that 1 second where they didn't know I was behind them. And I love it.
You can
jump jets too.
I'm trying to picture a tree large enough for a mech to hide behind in anything other than a...
We'll just say we're in redwood trees.
No, I'm picturing like a sapling at this point with your mech kind of huddled behind it going, oh boy, don't look over here, George.
You can actually grab it and move with it. So like you're just a tree moving with lasers coming out of it.
Absolutely. Oh, so, it's like they just look like cherries when you're warming up.
The only thing I don't like about the game is MechWarrior has still never done the thing where you can just get out. I want it so you can just get out.
An escape
patch? I just want so you can get out and start running on foot.
And then what would you do?
I don't know.
Get squished.
You could pull a Luke and shoot a grappling hook up with a grenade. I just want
and
to be able to
cut
out
the balls of an AT-AT.
You would just get shot instantly, but I think it would be fun. And the landscapes are really big, so...
Yeah, that was another... I remember MechWarrior 2.
You could shoot for miles away.
Trying to find people. That was... an adventure.
Well, this one, you can definitely find him. Has anyone played the one for Super Nintendo? Because that one was amazing. And yeah, the wolves or whatever the hell they were called in the Jade Falcon were in that one. So I don't know if it was just like kind of like a remake of the second game, but not as good. But it was fucking great. When you shot enemies, they turn orange. That's all I remember. Just Super Nintendo. It's not. There's no realistic damage. Everything was like 2D. 2D sprites that kind of move.
So it's like you'd shoot them and then go, oh no, citrus!
It would be like the Ninja Trolls arcade game where the more you shoot something, the more orange it would blink until it like blows up.
It was a port of the second game, not the first one?
I don't know.
Because the first one came out in 89.
I just remember the wolves and the Jade Falcon, and Luke said that was from the second.
Right?
They could have been also in the first. I haven't played the first.
It is actually
just in from Wikipedia.
It is actually based on the original MechWarrior.
Yeah, I figured it would, because, I mean, the first one was just all pixely graphics, so it would make sense that they ported it to Super Nintendo.
Jonna knows a lot about stuff and junk.
And things.
And things.
Something that's interesting to note is that MechWarrior, the games, were originally an Activision property, but the new MechWarrior Online that was free to play, by the way, so it's worth checking out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's done by Piranha Games.
And we all know what they've made.
Right.
Piranha Double D's and movies.
Actually, they're the guys behind Duke Nukem Forever.
You know what?
That's unfortunate.
Ignore that.
What did they do? Because I know Gearbox took that over. What was their part in that?
They're the developer. That's what Wikipedia says.
Well, okay, Gearbox
to
got
be
it?
Fair, there were like 15 different developers for Nuke. Nuke Dukem!
Oh, forever. Which would have been a better game.
Nuke Dukem.
Nuke Dukem.
Put him up!
So let's talk about what MechWarrior is. It's basically a thing within the BattleTech wargaming universe, and that was created by the FAFSA Corporation.
FAFSA.
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 I took my FAFSA. I got some money.
They are back as of the last year, early. I believe they are in fact involved with MechWarrior Online.
Okay. Well, so what do you guys know about BattleTech? It's a name I'm not. I like giant robot stuff, but I never pursued...
I like MechWarrior, but I don't know shit about the BattleTech universe in general. Like, I don't know what other games
I know very little about all this.
I know that throwing my phone against
another phone is kind of like a BattleTech.
There are very few other games that are involved in BattleTech that aren't MechWarrior, but there is the tabletop game, which is what started all of this.
Yeah, that's what I'm really only familiar with that.
Wait, even before the original MechWarrior, there was the tabletop.
Right. I think the story that I read was that BattleTech is sort of the final result of some Korean War veterans and a game they were playing.
Whoa. That's cool.
They were playing with actual military equipment, of course, and then a sci-fi fan got involved and it became giant robots.
So basically, two old Korean vets got in a tank, were shooting at each other, and someone said, "Huh, I could make some money off of this."
Let's add six more treads to
put
the tank.
Put some lasers.
I've got this dice and I enjoy drawing hex grids.
The game was actually originally called Battle Droids when it came out in 1984, but they changed it to BattleTech because Lucasfilm owned the term droid.
And Battle Droids became a very different game, if you remember it. Yes. I think you do. I think you remember Battle Droids when it came out that one time and then you played it and were like, fuck that.
Well, there's also, you know, the presence of Battle Droids in Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Mm.
So.
But I also remember
there was actually a shitty game called Battle Droids that I remember.
Remember
you can make your own droids?
Run around with an umbrella for a little while.
Yeah, and you're like, what am I doing in this game? Okay. I made a garbage can that can walk.
How am I floating with an umbrella? I'm a robot. I weigh far too much weight.
It wasn't a good game. Battle Droids. Don't play Battle Droids.
Don't even look it up.
Play MechWarrior.
To verify what we were saying.
I'm looking it up, but...
Okay, if you've got at least an i5 core in your computer... you can play this game because it does take some system requirements because there's a lot of lighting effects there. It takes a few system requirements. There's lighting effects, shadows, water, like everything looks really good. You can turn it down, but it'll still use a lot of system requirements.
Are we back to talking about MechWarrior Online and not Battle Online. Droids?
Don't play Battle Droids. Battle Droids, get the fuck out of here.
Oh, all right, I'm leaving. BattleTech universe, though. If you are interested in the BattleTech universe, and I think that people should be because it's a pretty deep universe. It's got a long history. It's set in the year, I think they're up to almost 3100. They might be past 3100 now, for all I know. the novels that are written by Michael Stackpole, who's, if you read any kind of fan sort of series novels, you'll probably know who he is and how good he is. Those are your best choices to go to. There's lots of inter-house politics involved. The whole universe is based around a house system. There's lots of big robots shooting at each other. The combat's good. There's a lot of detail in it, and the books are really good in general.
Would you say the house system is similar to the Klingon homeworld?
Probably. I don't know that much about the Klingon homeworld.
It's a house system.
Yeah,
I'm familiar.
House
with
of Moog,
the teaching hospital run by Cuddy and Housing House. That's a wonderful system.
Is it similar to
balances?
How about Game of Thrones?
Is it like that?
The House of Stark.
More like that.
Okay.
Okay, so if you like robots. Giant robots in Game of Thrones, then here's the thing: that's both of them.
BattleTech Universe.
Yes.
Eventually, yeah. Well, if you want to get technical, Game of Thrones, they ripped off the BattleTech Universe. Mm. It is actually the same thing, but instead of robots, it's just swords and people.
And dragons.
No, there's dragons in the BattleTech Universe.
They just call them mechs.
No, they're called dragons.
Shut up.
There are dragons with scales.
Why are they weighing things?
I don't know.
I mean, what
exactly? No, no, bad joke.
Let's get back to the that is a terrible joke. But let's get back to the game. Trench, when he requested this topic, actually said, MechWarrior 2 is probably the first computer game I ever played with a joystick, and the series is one of the reasons that I dig giant robots.
It is actually, it was completely innovative when it came out. It was amazing. No other game existed. I mean, I played this on...
Ever. No other game existed at all.
No other game existed until this came out.
1995.
Until MechWarrior 2.
And then there was the great fallout, which led us back to Pong.
No.
And they had to rebuild back up.
No, because I remember in middle school going to my friend's house, and he had a computer that just had DOS on it. And I don't know why. I think he was just a weirdo. And he would just type a bunch of things like MechWarrior 2 slash blah, blah, blah.
C://
Yeah.
C://
And then suddenly, the DOS became robots, and they were 3D. And I was like, oh my god, let me fire the Gauss rifle. Let me fire the Gauss rifle. And he's like, no, fuck off. I was like, let me fire the fucking Gauss rifle. And I hit the buttons and fire shit, and he would get exploded somehow. But, man, Gauss rifles.
In MechWarrior 2's point in history, they had not yet invented the Gauss rifle. I'm full of shit. I don't know if they're
No, there was a Gauss rifle. I promise you. It was a big ball that shot at an enemy.
I'm saying you're saying gauze. Yes. Like, and I think medical gauze. What on earth are you talking about?
It's a real gun.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
However, they call the it a gauze rifle is also important. The medical units would use that in order to patch up other mechs on the fly.
You would just see mechs with bandages on them.
Until they figured out a way to fire giant balls of metal with magnetism.
Luke, what more can you tell us about the BattleTech universe? Like, say from a role playing standpoint, like what kind of a role playing game is it?
It's mostly a tactical game if you're just playing BattleTech, because you have your mechs, which you can customize and however you want to, but there's not a lot of role playing to it. When they added the system called MechWarrior, you started to be able to have pilots that had characteristics in themselves and had their own stories and traits. That's why there's a division between MechWarrior and BattleTech, and I don't know why they decided to call the video games MechWarrior when you don't have you don't really have pilots that you level up or anything.
You know what's sad though is these games are terribly inaccurate now, because if this was the future and we were using giant robots, they'd obviously be drones. Because we're already doing that. Why would we pilot giant robots when we could just control them with a little computer?
Because the person who develops a giant robot is going to be a nerd who loved giant robots.
Have you ever heard the song Highway to the Danger Zone?
Yes.
Right.
Oh, is that it? Is that your answer?
That is my argument for manned robots in the future.
Touche. I stand erected.
I see that. Please put it back beneath
the
table.
I stand erection.
An ice hand erection.
I really don't know shit about the BattleTech universe, just the MechWarrior games. And speaking of which, Luke, have you ever played, and for the life of me, I can't remember if it was for PlayStation or Super Nintendo, because they look so similar, right? There was a shitty MechWarrior game where it's kind of like third-person overhead, and you have to control the top half of the body and the lower half of the body completely independently. So you have to move right with the body and turn and move forward, but then turn like left with the turrets and shoot, and the game sucked, and I could not beat any levels.
I vaguely do recall that game,
actually. It was one of the worst games ever. Made.
I think that was one that I rented, played for 5 minutes, and then was like, balls to this, and went back to something else.
I did the same. It was terrible. Don't play that one.
Must have been called Balls to This.
It was called MechWarrior / Balls to This.
We don't know which one it is, but don't play it.
Yeah, don't play it.
If you find out what it is, please post a comment on this episode's page so we can steer clear of it.
Yeah. But yeah, MechWarrior Online or Universe or whatever it's being called, it's still in beta.
MechWarrior Online.
Still in beta, still glitches. They need more people. You know, there's bug reports, but it is really, really fun when you're shooting at other people with lasers.
And might I stress again, free to play.
It's free. Did you say free to play?
Free to play.
Free to play. That's even better.
Yeah, it could also be pre to play, which is what happens. I mean, it's still in beta, so it's technically pre.
There you go. You
and
can
my computer overheating so badly is not really a sign of anything. My laptop is approaching 3 years and overheats on most things.
Wow, I'm surprised you can play it at all.
He opens up an Excel file and all of a sudden the fan kicks in.
I actually can't. I can't play it right now because the computer I was using is in another house. The computer I was using is in another castle, so I can't.
It was in the house that you set on fire.
Yeah, it was in there.
Interesting factoid. The game is real time in that it started on like January 1st, 2012, and it's that was equal to January 1st, 3049. And so it just, every day is another day.
You know what? They actually have a news feed every day with, like, they have stories and updates on the main menu when you load it up. So that it actually keeps up with the universe all the time. There's always story updates.
That's really cool.
And it's like, well, this character is doing this and this faction is doing this. And they are going to have faction systems implemented soon. They may have already. I haven't been on it in a little bit. But
no, I haven't either.
Yeah. But I will get back into it once I get a laptop.
For those who don't know anything about the BattleTech universe, that year will tell you that they are not yet to the clan invasion, but it's not that far off, unless they progress in real time, in which case you're going to have to wait years.
We all know what happened in the clan invasion. Oh my god.
That's when it got
so
good.
Many pillowcases.
That's where MechWarrior 2 happens. That's the clan invasion.
So many lowercase t's.
It's actually, MechWarrior 2 is the timeline where most things happen. It's the quintessential MechWarrior, since obviously everybody here who's played MechWarrior has played MechWarrior 2. MechWarrior Online takes place in that same period.
No, just before that period, actually.
That's how it's been lumped on the internets that I'm looking at.
That's how I explain to people why my mech sucks so much, is because it's before they even got good. So when I overheat and explode
before the
after...
Clan tech showed up, and they were really good.
So when I fire once and explode while possibly almost killing... It's funny when you explode at the same time of blowing someone else up, and they're like... Thanks, dick. And you're like, no problem, smiley face or winking eye. And then you wait another 20 minutes for the game to end because you just did it at the beginning of the match. And you can't really exit the game unless you want to be a jerk and lose all your experience points.
Any of you guys ever played Mech Assault?
Is that the terrible one I'm thinking of?
It's for Xbox.
No.
I played MechWarrior 4 on the Xbox. That's what it was.
I don't recall this ever existing. But
it's the same thing?
Yeah, it is. It's the same thing. It's the first battle mech video game that says battle mech. So what does that mean? So I'm clicking battle mech.
It means you're
so
battling with mechs.
That's the full name of the mechs in BattleTech.
Yeah, it is in the BattleTech universe, and I guess it was the first battle mech game done for the Xbox, and then there was a sequel, which was Mech Assault 2 Lone Wolf.
I do remember those games.
You don't want to be alone.
Holy shit.
Yeah, those are ringing some bells. I don't think I ever played
them. Wow, that's taking me back. I remember Lone Wolf because you were able to actually hop out of the cockpit and go between
you
mechs.
You see, that's what I wanted.
It happened
on
the
Xbox.
But I
wanted online, but if you're a lone wolf, you're going to get killed. You need to
be
in a group.
You see, you're a part of a team. You just don't listen. You're a renegade.
Lone wolf. I'm a lone wolf in a pack of one.
The only mech games I care about for Xbox are Steel Battalion and Metal Wolf Chaos, which you probably haven't heard of.
No, people should have heard of Steel Battalion because it was, what, $120 when it came out?
That's the one that came with the big setup.
It was $150. It was $100 for the controller.
Have any of you here actually played it? Have you gotten it?
Yeah, we would get them traded in at my old job, and I would always have to test them out.
Did you actually have the huge setup that came with it?
So for listeners, this is a game that is so... badass.
Realistic.
It actually came with a console with dials and switches and so on.
And if you had to eject,
if your mech started to blow up, you had to eject. There was an actual eject button.
Didn't you have to flip open a case and
you
pick
had to
a button?
Yes. Not only that, but there was like a whole sequence you had to do, and if you didn't do it in time,
bye,
not
bye,
only
save
did you
file.
Die. Deleted your save file. You could be at the end of the fucking game.
Are you serious?
Brandon, that game has your name written all over it. You have to play this game.
Okay.
We got to track one down for you.
Let's use Nerdy Show money to buy it for me. Because I can't get it right now.
There are lots out there because, I mean, everybody's probably heard of that mech game where you had the giant controller. So
and
I bet you can get them on eBay
for not
$190.
It was a good game, though, right? Was it fun?
Yeah, it's
no,
cool.
The first one was amazing. Then they had the 360 re-release where the person behind this thought to themselves, you know what, our last one was moderately successful because it came with a giant controller. I know what we'll do. We'll get rid of the controller entirely and use the Kinect.
Ugh.
Because
yeah.
that oh. is precision
that,
gaming.
That kills...
Do you have to, like, Minority Report to control it?
Uh-huh.
Except it's not as accurate as Minority Report.
No.
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 Oh, wow.
I am bigger than Tom Cruise. That could be a problem.
Why have they not made a Minority Report game using the Kinect? No, all you would do is be like, I'm looking at pre-crime. You just like move shit around and discover stuff. There wouldn't be actual any game besides moving the screens and like zoom in and zoom out, moving your hands everywhere.
That is the only fun part about Kinect games.
They're not going to make a Minority Report.
Well, my friend is playing a Kinect game, and I yell out instructions for the Xbox that he can't control.
Xbox off! And he's like, damn it! And then he has to go on.
I've gone on eBay here, and the average going price for the controller set is just under $200.
You know what?
I see them on Craigslist a lot, though. So yeah.
Is that with or without the game?
The game's like $5 alone. It's the controller is where all the value is.
I guess it varies a lot, though. There's one that actually comes with an Xbox. So, and that's $200. So.
Oh, that's actually a good deal because I don't have one.
Does that include shipping, though?
No.
I'm fine okay. with it. It's like $20
for shipping. No, it's not $20 for that thing.
It's like $500 for shipping.
Yeah.
Is it that heavy?
It's not super heavy. It's just
big. How many Brandons does it weigh?
Is it a full mech cockpit? Because
yes,
crap,
it's a whole
TV
mech cockpit.
It's three different panels. There's one right in front of you, and then one to either side, and a joystick on either
and
side.
And a foot
of that,
panel.
And a foot panel
with
and
three pedals.
What the?
Do you have to work the legs?
Yeah,
yes. You do.
Oh my God, Luke, we ain't nobody got time for that. No, Luke, we got to get on this. I don't know how. I don't know when.
They're on Craigslist all the time. I'll find one for you.
And is there online play?
No, it only had multiplayer. Like if you connect up different Xboxes together
with other consoles.
Yes, you have to get multiple setups.
You know what this means?
Multiple copies of the game.
We have to get multiple setups and multiple copies of the game. We need to have
a video of us playing this.
I might know a guy with six sets of this game. I'll get back to you.
Yes,
this is way better than Mandingo wrestling. This is a real game for rich people.
Mandingo means two different things to us.
However, back in the Mech Warrior universe.
L'chaim warrior.
now presenting Luke McDuffie's BattleTech Universe Lightning Round.
Ba-da-da-da.
All right, there was a big war on Earth after humans had already spread out to other planets.
Done.
This war was it was so bad that one of the main commanders of one of the militaries decided to everybody sucks, I'm up and leaving, and he up and left, and that kind of left with a lot of the military hardware and a lot of the military people. So that left the universe in kind of disarray. There was a lot of civil war going until there was the house system, and there's a few, I can't remember how many different organizations and houses there are that now run the universe, but none of them really know how to work a lot of the technology that's still left over. So they can't really build new mechs. They have a really hard time building new weapons. So all the mechs that are there are just sort of there, and they have to be scrapped. And that's kind of how the universe sits. There's a lot of infighting there's a lot of houses or struggling between the houses for superiority up until the clan invasion, when the guy who left with all of the military, they come back, and they are now this weird militarized, semi-Klingon type organization. And they have all the good technology, and they start kicking ass until a bunch of other stuff happens.
So they just find all the mechs, but don't know how to really build them yet?
Correct. There are maybe a couple of mech factories left that people only halfway know how to use.
Okay. That sounds cool. That sounds cool.
Is the story behind this universe more like Battlefield Earth or more like Chronicles of Riddick?
Or Exo Squad.
Oh my God, don't even
I'm
going
to go with Chronicles of Riddick.
That's a whole other Microsoft right there.
That's a whole other shit I want to talk about.
And I would also say Riddick, because Battlefield Earth can go fuck itself.
Someone please ask for an Exo Squad, Microsoft.
Pretty
That's
please.
All you're getting.
Just for an excuse for me to rewatch the series.
Someone asked for an episode of Microsoft where Julie. I can talk about the Warhammer universe, because I've never played any Warhammer or 40K, but I love the universe.
Well, I believe we actually do have a Microsoft.
What?
What?
Viral Demon requested miniature war games, and his examples were Warhammer Fantasy and 40K.
Ooh, you're
what
in
about
luck.
StarCraft?
No. That's not
miniatures. Miniature.
Oh, what?
They do have some kind of tabletop. StarCraft
I thought when you
game.
Meant miniature, I just mean like zoomed out, so they look small.
Small little guys.
I mean, you get a spaceship with a Yamato laser, and it's tiny. That's a miniature. And it's it's on a screen, but how's that any different? How many fucking Yamato beams do you need to destroy like a base? God, I think it should be like a nuke. Fucking All right.
So, taking us out,
that shit.
We got to track an old as hell, because MechWarrior music is in short supply. A track from OCR. This is from MechWarrior 2, 31st Century Combat. The track itself is called Wow Training Exercises, and it's by Isis Sombra.
Wait, is that actually what it's called?
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. Oh my goodness. This is going to get hot up in this shit tonight.
It says,
that's the full title.
WAWOOW! Exclamation mark.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
I almost see that as whoa, whoa.
You sound like, what's that guy from Van Halen? Who's it? I don't know. It's Bandex guy.
Yeah, no, David Roth.
David Lee Roth?
Roth.
Wow! Leg kick!
Okay,
yeah. Bye, I'm Cap.
I'm Tony.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Jonna.
I'm Luke.
Enjoy. Hey guys, it's Cap. I'm back. Before we go to the next microsode, I'd like to say thank you to some very awesome people who gave us some generous support in May. It looked like it was going to be a really slow month, and then bam, geez, you guys hammered us with crystalline star sapphire love energy. Not only did we meet our monthly support goal, but we also met our stretch goal of $600 for helping us offset the travel costs of E3. And now we're chugging along, working on our next support goal, which should take care of all of our expenses for E3. That goal is $900, and there's only, well, a couple days to work towards that, but you guys have done so much already. We're very, very grateful, as always. We're a listener-supported podcast network. You make this show and all the other shows on the network possible. So I'm going to give shout-outs to all the awesome people who contributed, and many of them sent us messages. But I'm going to save those messages for when it's not me talking in a void. At least someone else from the Nerdy Show crew can share in this, but this is all pretty last minute, so it's just me here. Robert Stoneback, Sean Red, Korik, Adam Wolffinger, Tyler Conrad, Big Bad Shadow Man, Dr. Gamer Scientist, Callus, and Viral Demon. You guys are amazing. And not only did you help us out, but you also unlocked additional support perks this month. You unlocked about 8 or 9 minutes of outtakes from the conclusion of D&D Book 2, featuring a ton of crazy Galdap stuff. And for passing the $600 mark, you guys unlocked another perk. It's myself and some of the crew of Ghostbusters Resurrection, and I think maybe Tony, I can't remember, possibly Tony, doing some Adventure Time Mad Libs about tree trunks. So if you supported us, we'll be sending you all that stuff in the mail. Everything that's ever been a part of a Nerdy Show support perk, and all the new stuff, right to your email. With new stuff coming out every month and every time, you guys push us over the threshold of one of our goals. It's the least we can do to give back to you guys for being so awesome. And of course, if you want to earn a microsode, like these two discussions I'm in the middle of right now, well, every $100 mark we pass, that's your chance to decide what we'll talk about for 15 to 30 minutes. So now it's time to oil up your chest, put on your enchanted boots, power up your laser sword, and dive into a perilous world where dragons with laser eyes and cybernetic hooves fly on interstellar ley lines into adventure. It's Nerdy Show's favorite meldings of sci-fi and fantasy.
Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
I'm Nina.
Hey, I'm Adam.
I'm Tony.
I'm Josh.
And today, we're going to talk about our favorite meldings of sci-fi and fantasy.
Saga!
This episode is brought to you has been brought to you by Big Bad Shadow Man, and Tony's started the ball rolling with
Brian K. Vaughan's Saga, yep, which is one of the most epic sci-fi stories with people who do magic. I mean, it's the ultimate meld-up.
They got a rocket ship that's a tree.
It's got a very good opening line. It's just, I feel like I'm shitting!
Am I shitting?
It's also got the best dog. Or a cat.
Lion cat.
Lion cat. Lion yeah. cat, yeah.
Sorry. World's best dog.
Shut up.
The best line is when they leave the Sexapalooza place or Sextopia or whatever.
The Sextillion.
Sextillion. And the cat's not allowed in. Yeah, the cat's not allowed in. And he's like, oh, don't worry, you would have had a horrible time anyway.
Lying.
So besides Saga.
Honestly, I think the best example is 40K.
It's one of the examples, yeah.
But I think it's one of the best of just blending of sci-fi and fantasy.
That's very rich ground there.
You know, we've got some 40K related microsodes coming up actually, but we haven't recorded them yet as of this recording. And I know very little about 40K. I know there's Space Wolves, which rule
very small
part
of it.
but beyond that, I didn't realize. I thought 40K. I thought 40K was a straight up just space shooter environment. There's magic elements to it.
Definitely there is magic.
I mean, to give you an idea, like a typical bad guy could range from these ancient machines that are older than recorded time, that have had their souls put into these machines that are undying, and their technology outstrips everything else. Or you go to the forces of chaos, which are basically the same gods from the Warhammer fantasy.
Oh, nice.
But they are scarier in the 40K version because you got Khorne, the blood god, skulls for the skull for them, Mm-hmm.
And they're like
40,000 years older. They get cranky.
Oh,
In 40K and Warhammer 40K and Warhammer Fantasy, I think it's important to recognize that they are separate.
They are, yeah.
They are not, they do not inhabit the same universe. It's not 40K.
Regular Warhammer doesn't have science.
No. There's no, well, it's also just a different timeline because in this one, Slaanesh was the first chaos god, the god of like evil and whatever, because the Eldar.
You are so going to be on our Warhammer episode.
Slaanesh was created by the Eldar, but she's not the oldest. She's the youngest.
Well, if Slaanesh is a god that I believe exists in the Warhammer fantasy, I'm not as familiar with it, but I know they have similar like succubi and stuff like that that are based on them. But they give a definite origin for her, his creation, in
it's like 10,000 years before the current timeline, I think, or something like that.
No. It's much earlier than that.
The webways get fucked and all sorts of stuff.
Another good one.
Before we get too deep in here, actually, because trigger finger Tony, is this what your love life is like?
You'd have to ask my wife.
Okay. Maybe I will. Big Bad Shadow Man says, by sci-fi fantasy, I mean science fiction and the supernatural magic coexisting in the universe. You know, we figured that. We got that.
Ghostbusters.
He wants to hear, what are some of our favorite sci-fi fantasy stories, movies, games, comic books? He says his personal favorite sci-fi fantasy is pretty much anything that has Mothra in it.
Huh.
Why am I not surprised?
Mothra's not in Ghostbusters. Yeah.
But everything in Godzilla I thought was science-based.
With the exception of Mothra.
Mothra is crazy. I've only learned recently about Mothra, and we do have Big Bad Shadow Man to thank for that. Mothra
has its own separate thing.
By no means. The things I'm about to say is probably have a trillion things wrong with, but Mothra has priestesses, and the priestesses are
two tiny
Chinese women in like I don't really know what role they play, but they somehow command Mothra, and like they're like speakers on behalf of Mothra, who is some kind of deity, you know?
Did you just watch Godzilla versus the Sea Monster? Is that the one you saw?
No, I watched Godzilla versus Biollante, the giant plant that was a rose, that was a woman, that was a monster.
The Godzilla versus the Sea Monster, Mothra shows up and they have to consult the tiny priestesses, ladies, and everything as well.
And Godzilla versus Mothra, I think, is their first appearance because she nets him and he falls into the ocean. That's the end of the movie.
So there's that. What were you going to say, Josh?
I was going to say there's a lot of steampunk that does this. A notable one is there's an anime that came out called Last Exile that was really good. It was just about these kids who basically wanted to have their own little airship, and they wanted to enter a race and do this, but there's this like overwhelming, like high oppressive society above them. It's very good. I recommend checking it out. Getting into it would take way too long.
Jumping, actually piggybacking off of that a little bit, just in the anime, is the series Outlaw Star, which is it's a sci-fi epic, but one of the main weapons used throughout is this the weapon known as the caster, where essentially magic has been weaponized, and by weaponized I mean put into like cartridges that can be used in a firearm. They're very, very rare, and most people don't even believe in it, but there's a lot of mystic undertones that go along with it. And Tenchi Muyo, another classic anime.
I was gonna say, one of the characters in Outlaw Star actually cuts trucks in half with a wooden sword.
Definitely some fantasy, some sci-fi stuff going on.
And what you're talking about, you know, weaponizing magic, that sounds very much like the plot to Final Fantasy VII.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And of course, the Final Fantasy games are notorious for fusing sci-fi and fantasy on occasion. You used to lean more towards the fantasy end, and these days, it's either or.
Final Fantasy VI was like the most, I think, out of all the ones I've played, had the most focus on technology, I think.
Something I love, another thing from Squaresoft, I mean, obviously Chrono Trigger, there's that, but Secret of Mana. You think it's a straight-up fantasy thing until all of a sudden you unearth a hidden continent and you find a subway station filled with zombies. And you're just like, what the fuck just happened? You're not ready for it. There's no hint that anything existed prior. Well, okay, that's not true. You find a bunch of computers and one of them talks about Abraham Lincoln, but you think it's maybe just a weird joke. Mm-hmm. And then that happens, and you're like, what don't I understand? And they never explain it.
Am I the only one here who's played Xenogears?
No.
I've played
Xeno goddamn Gears.
Yeah, it's maybe the best RPG I've ever played, and it definitely is a perfect fusion. But you find out, like, a lot of powers come from God, but God is, like, what you refer to as God is not an actual deity. It's a creature that lives in the ocean, and it was
very angry.
Very angry.
And that you and your girlfriend.
It's super good.
It is absolutely incredible. I highly recommend
but
it.
But much like in Secret of Mana, you go underground at one point and you find a place called Zeboim, and I don't want to spoil anything, but it's really awesome.
But speaking of games, I was recently looking into Shadowrun.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. When the guy who Game Masters Ghostbusters Resurrection is looking into Shadowrun, well, that's an interesting thing.
We have even half as many six-sided dice.
No, I wasn't looking into playing it per se, but the universe was intriguing because I had no idea what it was. I just knew about the joke that you'll never have enough D6s to play. I'm like, what is this game that everyone's talking about? And then I'm like, oh, so there's like elves and stuff, but it's modern day. Then it's like, no, it's magic and sci-fi mixed together.
What
like...
I've been told is that anything with the Shadowrun name on it is amazing.
Yeah.
The like, Xbox video game is decent.
It's like it's kind of like a dumbed down Tribes, but it's pretty fun.
I mean, it's fun.
Don't play it online if you're playing on Xbox, because you'll be playing against people on PC and you will get destroyed.
Oh well,
yeah, because it's like, hey, let's put you on a, you know, let's match you with your little controller and your analog sticks up against people with mice and keyboards who have all of their various commands macroed, and you know, just go fuck yourself, really.
Yeah.
I was going to say, now, Nina is the resident X-Files expert that I know about. Does X-Files count as sci-fi and fantasy, or is that just science fiction?
Of course it counts as sci-fi and fantasy. Yeah, I'm gonna back you up on this. Anything supernatural counts.
But do they explain it away as science, or is it, like, literally supernatural? Well,
no, there's plenty of episodes where it doesn't get explained away.
Well, Scully will always explain everything away as science. You can count on that.
But Scully's proven wrong in a lot of episodes.
Scully's pretty much almost always proven wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's until about... maybe season 7 when she actually turns into a believer herself because she's seen so much shit over the years.
Well, you know, you're right, because I can't believe I forgot, because like there is an episode with ghosts, and it's like, well, the ghosts aren't explained away as science, like the ghosts are just ghosts.
There are plenty episodes with ghosts, there's an demons, episode with, the Jersey Devil,
there's an episode with
sea
ghosts
monsters,
that actually is
anything.
One of the pivotal secrets of the entire show revolves around ghosts, actually. So, yeah. It's a fusion for sure.
You know, thinking about it, could we argue that Ghostbusters is a merger of sci-fi and
definitely.
Fantasy?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Just because, I mean, let's face it, ghosts are definitely fantasy, but they're explaining them away as...
And we're taking them down by science.
Hey guys, let's talk about Ghostbusters.
One of my favorite movies that does this, I guess maybe it's a guilty pleasure, is the movie Krull.
Oh God.
Where it's
a Josh movie.
Don't feel any shame for Krull.
I love Krull.
Krull's wonderful.
I love it, but it's basically it's full fantasy world, like straight up like cyclopses, flying horses. It's full on fantasy, magic, everything. And an alien crash lands there from outer space. And it's these people, these fantasy guys don't understand it. Like they think it's like just a like basically, bad stuff is happening because it's alien, and they have to like go into his alien spaceship and try to take him out. And I think it's awesome, but a lot of people think it's really boring and stupid.
That reminded me of one time I was watching you play World of Warcraft, and you're like, "Oh, there's cars and stuff. We're driving around in World of Warcraft. I'm like, there's science in World of Warcraft. So would that count as science and fantasy?
Yeah,
it's all steampunk stuff.
It's, I mean, calling it science when just like things sputter out of it.
It's alchemy more, and alchemy.
Yeah,
is still
I think
kinda...
you really need to have a laser gun or an extraterrestrial or something that's really truly beyond just, you know, an industrial revolution.
Cool, and to that,
There are lasers in World of Warcraft.
But there's aliens, isn't there? Like aliens from other planets?
Yeah, the Titans are aliens and the old ones are aliens.
Interesting.
Just gotta bring up, you know, to everybody who says that Star Wars is not strict sci-fi, fuck you, that means it's science fantasy, because it's a lot of fantasy elements in a sci-fi series.
It's space magic, the Force is what
ta-da.
It is.
Yeah, it's
fuck
Star
midichlorians.
Wars. Well, I mean, I don't think midichlorians removes the fantasy aspect of
Star
Wars.
It does attempt to do so.
Yeah, but it fails horribly.
But I refuse to acknowledge them.
Well,
so
I'm gonna be an ancient, powerful Sith Lord and use...
biological means.
Use tiny, like, mitochondria-sized bacteria to move suns. Like, I don't understand how that doesn't explain anything. Like, it's still magic. It's
the most fantastical element of Star Wars. How the fuck do the lightsabers just stop? It's light.
Magic.
Come on.
That's why it's sci-fi fantasy.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying. It's a fantastic
crystals,
element.
Obviously. You're just the
clearly, you've never seen light go through a crystal.
How is light? Hold on. Because I think you could argue this one easier than you could argue the Force. Because we know that if you bend magnetic force enough, light can't escape. So, like, you could say that maybe the light from lightsaber loops back in on itself.
So there's a mini black hole?
It doesn't have to be. I'm not saying that. It may not be gravity. It may just be...
And you know what? I'm sure that some scholar has already fixed this problem for us. We can just look it up on Wikipedia.
I'd rather not look at a lot of math right now.
Well, the thing about talking about World of Warcraft and then X-Files made me think, what about the Blade universe? Like Wesley Snipes' Blade film universe?
Well, then you're just lumping in Marvel and DC, and they are absolutely
well,
yes.
Well, he just said the film universe.
Like, because I'm not familiar with the comic books, but in the movie, the vampires
are
traditional.
There is a blood god, yeah.
Yeah, there's a traditional vampire where it's like there's mystical rules, but Blade uses a lot of science fiction-y type of things.
But the movie is in many ways true to Blade's corner of the Marvel Universe, and the Marvel Universe is a fusion of all those things. So,
one of the best comic book movies.
But would, but would you really count that as science fiction?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would say science fantasy.
Rather.
Yeah, because they use all their science fiction to make the guns and the weapons. Mm-hmm. Because it ain't the fucking March of Dimes.
However, they got the titanium sword and not just dull instantly.
But isn't that theoretically... Like, what would qualify as science fiction if you could technically build all of that in real life?
If you could technically build all of it in real life, then it's not science fiction.
That's my question. Is Blade science fiction? It's clearly fantasy.
No, because the bullets they use and stuff, and like the... They have that stuff filled with the blue liquid that it's not real.
Isn't there also like
real.
UV bombs?
Yeah, UV bombs.
Plus, I mean, the vampires in the second one, the crazy, unhinged jaw ones, aren't those a product of science?
But they're also clearly fantasy based because they're vampires.
I thought they were like the next step in vampire evolution.
Yeah, like Dracula was trying to level up vampires to live,
which
be
is
stronger,
genetic modification,
which is science.
There was a blood god.
Yeah, that's true.
So it definitely has that fantasy element still.
Okay, answer my question.
You know, most comics that are fantastical in some direction and are around for a while do inevitably meld sci-fi and fantasy. You know, one of the things that's been had the weirdest time getting adapted is Ninja Turtles. Obviously, a very fictiony science world they got there, but whenever it's adapted, they always, like in films, and I'm speaking specifically about films, they always avoid going into space. With the exception of Turtles in the third Turtles film.
Don't you dare call that Turtles in Time, sir.
we all have called that film Turtles in Time at one point or another. They really should have just called it that. I mean,
That's the only way they could have made that movie worse would be to call it Turtles in Time.
Anyway, it's one of those comics universes that mashes it all up, which is, I think, you know, a good thing. It's if you're already going in one ridiculous direction, go in all ridiculous directions.
Yeah. And I mean, very famously, there's Thor. There's even the line in Thor that what you call magic and what you call science, I call magic. Well, where I come, they're one and the same.
Here's the thing. I think that's cool, but I'm annoyed by it. And here's why. Because they did that in a part for the movie-going audience, because, you know, they repeatedly refer to Asgard as another planet or something like it happens in Avengers. They sort of refer to it it's like a celestial body of some sort.
You're an Asgardian,
but like, it's another dimension altogether.
Right. They're like, we'll give you Thor. We'll give you this magic-themed Thor movie, but we're also gonna do everything we can to try to put quantum physics in it so you can think it's still science-based, because if we said, oh, it's magic, then you, the audience, wouldn't respect it for some reason.
Well, it goes into this... There's this thing about screenwriting, the
double mumbo-jumbo.
Yeah, it's a rule called double mumbo-jumbo, where if you go, okay, well, it's science... And then, by the way, wizards, it screws up your suspension of disbelief. And the idea is, like, you can call it science or magic, they're one and the same, whatever. Maybe nobody in that universe really understands it. Maybe it is magic. We don't really know. We're not going to deal with it here. That's better than saying that straight up, it is magic. That's what's going on. Because that's one of the things that drives me crazy about the Marvel Universe, when everybody's like all the magicians and stuff are doing things, and Doctor Strange and Tony Stark are teaming up, and he's like, you wouldn't understand this, Tony, it's magic. It's like, if it exists... And if it's in front of you, it's science. You know,
it's measurable. Like,
there's no reason why Tony Stark would study everything in the universe but magic.
But he also has. That's the thing. That's never tried, but he has.
But he's not a sorcerer. Why wouldn't he be Dr. Doom? Like,
yeah, that's exactly what I was going to bring. We're back to our villains episode. Dr. fucking Doom.
Yeah,
but
Dr. Doom is
master
both.
Of science and magic.
This all goes back into the point of our favorite blendings of sci-fi and fantasy, because it is kind of common, but it really... shouldn't be that common, because when you start mixing that shit together, it gets murky. It gets like, wait a minute, now it's kind of sucks.
Especially,
and like, what were you gonna say?
Well, I mean, I was just thinking of the fourth Indiana Jones movie. Because people, you know, yeah, I can already hear the collective groaning here.
But you're right,
it had to be mentioned.
Yeah. That's a double mumbo jumbo coming
it
up.
Is.
That's why it's bad.
Part of the double mumbo jumbo rule. Yeah.
And Indiana Jones was established as a world where magic exists.
Yes.
Science obviously exists because there's technology, but it wasn't a science fiction universe.
It was mysticism.
I feel that the problem is that they handled it very poorly, because they didn't. They're like, all right, we're going to introduce the sci-fi element, but we're not going to explain it very well.
Right.
We're not going to make any attempt to try to make this fit in. Instead, we're going to avoid talking about it until when we inevitably do talk about it, Indiana Jones says, it says to the audience, basically, they're not aliens. They're from another place altogether.
Interdimensional beings.
Right. Yeah. And because it's
that's
like,
not an alien.
That, so, oh, so that makes it better. That doesn't make it more convoluted, because I would have accepted aliens if the presentation had been right.
They're treating it much like they treated Mrs. Wong, this kind of unspoken, we can't speak of this.
The problem with Indiana Jones 4, because it's usually the other way around. Usually there's a science fiction universe, then they introduce magic. You're like, what the fuck, magic? Indiana Jones is that rare case where it was a magic universe, then you bring in science fiction, and it's like, I can't explain it, but this feels wrong. Like
it's like basically if Dracula showed up during Blade Runner, you know what I mean? It's double mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, if Deckard is like, Deckard, you know, we got this new skin job walk on the street. We shoot him and nothing happens. He's clearly a replicant, but there's no record of him at the Tyrell Corporation.
Which is one of,
kick down the door and it's Dracula in a coffin somewhere.
It's one of my biggest problems with Metal Gear Solid 2.
He's like, what are you? Are you a machine or a man? What is a man?
No, Vamp is explained in 4.
He is explained, but at the same time, it's just nanomachines. Like, you know, it's very...
That's science.
It was science.
Why is it only used for one person?
That's science's way of going, it's magic. What the fuck? I don't care.
But they specifically put it under the umbrella of explainable science. Mm-hmm. They say, no, there is science here. We can't explain it, but it takes too long and it's going to bore you and pull you away from the action scene that you're about
Except
to have.
Except in the context of Metal Gear Solid 2. Like, if you added Metal Gear Solid 4, yeah, fine, okay, it's science fiction. If you were a kid and you were playing Metal Gear Solid 2 and Metal Gear Solid 4 wasn't out yet, it's like, okay, so it's Metal Gear Solid plus vampires and telekinesis.
Tagging back, I know it's a long stretch, tagging back to X-Files, all you guys aware about X-Files Season 10? The comic book? Very excited.
Coming out in June, I believe.
And it's IDW,
Written by Joe Harris, IDW, yeah. Chris Carter's on the case.
The initial covers look amazing.
Yes. We're actually going to do what we can to get some kind of an interview pertaining to that.
Keep your fingers crossed, folks.
Because again, the thing about Indiana Jones, starting with magic, trying to introduce science and failing, a good opposite of that, but succeeding, would be like classic Star Trek, the original series, where it's hard science fiction, just like pure science fiction. Mm-hmm. Then they introduce the idea of like Apollo, the god, not like an alien who's pretending to be Apollo, but literally Apollo.
I'm not familiar with
or
this.
Even that's Q.
It's who mourns for Adonis is the episode.
Yeah, and it's literally the god Apollo as we knew him from ancient Greece, and he's the only god left from the ancient Greek gods. But he is an alien, and it's not like one of those what if ancient gods were really ancient astronauts from other planets.
No, but he literally is as he appeared to the Greeks.
He is as he appeared.
He has all those pure powers, but that was his alien culture and how they lived.
So basically, the Greek culture was an alien culture, and he looks human, but he's like tall. He's like, what, like 20, 50 feet tall or something like that. They were able to bring that into a Star Trek science fiction universe and have it work, because at first you're like, this is cheesy. What the hell is this? But the more they go into it, you're like, oh shit, they gotta get out of there. You know, like you get wrapped up in it. But why can Star Trek do that, flipping it, taking science, introducing magic, and having it work, but Indiana Jones takes magic, introduces science, and it doesn't work?
Well,
there's a lot of reasons, but I just think it's weird that they can't.
I just remembered a book. I'm trying to remember the title of it, and I will. I'll get the title of it, I'll give it to the Cap, and we'll get it in the links at this episode's page. But it was about these orcs in an ancient fantasy world, and they're going up against the High Crowd, and they go, and they're this one troop of them, they discover a dragon's horde, and as they start to invade the dragon's horde, they find, like, futuristic weapons. They find AK-47s, they find jeeps, and all of a sudden they start using, like, military tactics, and these orcs wind up taking over the world, and it was one of the most entertaining fantasy books I've ever read.
Please tell me you didn't read Battlefield Earth.
No, this was not Battlefield Earth.
Okay.
Because that is another one of those failings.
Tony is a devout Scientologist, Doug. It's really wrong of us to mock his beliefs.
No, it's true. No, hey,
Dianetics.
Blending of science fiction and fantasy.
Is that Dianetics? I think it could be.
Dianetics Jr. much better than Krishna.
Much better indeed.
I mean, I think we can all agree that the failing of Indiana Jones 4, in terms of a melding of science fiction and fantasy, is just the way it was handled. Because like we've touched on, you can have like this snippet in a sci-fi world of fantasy coming in. So long as the characters recognize it as fantasy, treat it as such, and just kind of like, you know, maybe there are some things we can't explain. But Indiana Jones, it becomes this huge ordeal, and it's like, look, this is the way, and it's just like with the Ark, and it's just like with all this. It's like, no, had it been something quicker, had it been something maybe just... you thought it was fantasy up until the last bit, and then, nope, aliens.
I have a whole hour to launch into. That's going to have to be into the microscope.
There's another franchise that Cap was watching when we walked in here today.
That's true. That does it perfectly. Holy crap. How do we not even think of that?
Samurai Jack.
And holy God.
This thing, now that Cartoon Network shows are on Netflix, I can finally enjoy Samurai Jack sequentially, which I wasn't able to do when it was on. You know, I always saw parts of it, but in doing so, in watching the first three episodes in a row, I was just like, what the fuck? How did they get this show made? Dude, it doesn't make any sense.
The first three episodes were
Seven Samurai redone as a children's cartoon with giant alien robot bugs. Like it's with he's trying to help the dogs.
That was the third episode. I feel like the first three episodes are one piece altogether.
They were even released as a DVD. That this was the origin of Samurai Jack.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. The first episode, it is almost a completely silent episode showing this kid growing up all over the known world, being trained by different cultures. And then only at the end is Aku like, I'm going to send you back in time or ahead into the future where I will rule. Matter of fact, Jack. And it's like, what? And then boom, all of a sudden Jack's in the future. And then there's a space where a commercial break would be. And it cuts back and there's like, here's a bunch of talking dogs sitting around. And you're like, is this the same show? what just happened here? This is weird Ron Paulson dog talking?
You immediately forget it. You're just like, this is amazing.
Yeah, because the dogs are basically the like lowly samurai from Seven Samurai walking around trying to find somebody to help them defend their village of dogs.
Now, I mean, and there are a lot of different homages like that. I mean, there's a fucking Spartan episode with
that one's almost entirely silent.
It is almost entirely silent, and it won them one of their Emmys.
Mm-hmm. So did the Three Blind Archers.
Yes,
and the bug episode is actually also almost entirely silent. I might add.
Yeah, it's amazing. He rides like a giant so eight-legged much. Horse like Sleipnir. Yeah. It is awesome.
That show does so much for just storytelling. And to those of you who haven't watched Samurai Jack, seriously, it's up available on Netflix. I'm going to give Cap some of my DVDs so he can watch seasons 2 and 3 since those aren't up yet. And just...
Oh, thank you.
Oh, dear Lord. It's such a good show.
Before we forget, the Clone Wars.
What about...
That's still Star Wars.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, the Clone Wars isn't just... I just had to throw it out there. It's the same thing.
The Tartakovsky...
Yeah,
Clone Wars series was anything that Tartakovsky does.
Yeah.
Really has this blending of sci-fi and fantasy to an extent. Because even in Symbionic Titan, his most recent series, the idea of a robot with a soul is kind of a fantasy element to it. Because it's at what point does a robot stop being just circuitry? Where does that line between humanity and a robot exist?
And to keep on the line of at least cartoons, one that starts off you think it's going to be terrible, but then after successive seasons gets better and better, Gargoyles.
Yeah.
That's pure sci-fi fantasy.
There's definitely science fiction because there's like lasers in it.
It started off and you didn't think it was good?
Well, I was like, this is really interesting, but it could be bad really easily. And like the first season was okay, but then like the further it gets, the better it gets.
Until you get to the Goliath Chronicles, at which point everything went downhill.
I never watched that part.
That's because it didn't have Greg Wiseman.
Oh.
R.I.P. Young Justice.
Creator left. Anyway, but yes, all good things. So obviously we could go on forever because really the... Nerd stuff in general is founded on a fusion of sci-fi and fantasy, so thank you so much for listening. If you want a Nerdy Show microsode, well, all you gotta do is support us, and if the timing is right, if you employ strategy as well as gift giving, then you will get a Nerdy Show microsode. Thanks so much for listening. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Doug.
Bye, Nina.
Bye, I'm Adam.
Bye, I'm Tony.
Bye, I'm Josh.
One of the great things about the paranormal is that the paranormal often combines elements of sci-fi and fantasy. I mean, think about how there's, you know, X-Files episodes about things like Native American shapeshifters, just as well as all the sci-fi-driven UFO plots. And one of our favorite paranormal shows on the air right now is Gravity Falls. Nerd rapper Adam Warrock, he loves Gravity Falls so much that after seeing only the first four episodes about a year ago, he wrote a kick-ass rap track. And since then, not only has he started a podcast, the Gravity Falls Gossiper, all about Gravity Falls, but also interviewed the show creator and visited the studio where it's made. Well, recently, he went back and redid his original rap track. Now, there's considerably more episodes of the show out, and he's not recording the track while he's on the road. The beat's remastered, the audio's better than ever, there's new verses, and this is Gravity Falls 2.0 by Adam Warrock.
Me, Dipper, and Mabel took a summer vacation to the place where green trees with rivers and lakes, and it's where tourists come to see mysteries that thrill, all locked up in a shack that we work until our great Uncle Stan has got a plan to make a buck or two. So we sit and wait with our production crew, that's Wendy and Seuss, and all the local coterie everyone that wasn't at. And you can stay in Sweater Town till the sun goes down, but I'm on the SS Cool Dude cruising around. And Waddles is the cutest thing that Mabel can see, while the Multi Bear is singing Disco Girl with me. With Dipper and Tyrone got a party going on, and I'm there with all my friends. When I grab the microphone, the crowd's chanting, hands are going to the ceiling when I tell them that I'm never gonna start unbelieving. And yes, we mean it, because we got each other's backs. When Gideon's got a book and the plans he tries to hatch, or when Bobby's on our backs with his skinny jeans, that's when we tell Rumble McSkirmish she's the one that killed my dad. Psych, doing this together, gnomes, mentors with peckers, so just ignore Pacifica, always thinking she's better. Call me the typical Gravity Falls resident, wearing a button that leaves Quentin Tremblay for president. Hold me, Will and Dipper, gonna keep everything in the picture, and the mystery's cracked and it's history jack for all supernatural misfits. And back then it's aimed with a plane for the mystery shack. Meanwhile, all the kids gonna keep coming back, spring, winter, fall. I wanna spend them all.
Hey bro, thanks for listening to Nerdy Show. Nerdy Show is made possible by A Comic Shop, Nerdapalooza, and the generous support of listeners like you. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by, like, telling a friend and rating and reviewing us on iTunes or making a contribution to our monthly support drives, right? Any size contribution gets you exclusive Nerdy Show audio and images and lets you participate in our monthly support drives. Just go to nerdyshow.com/support to chip in, you know? For more episodes of Nerdy Show, as well as other fine programming, community forums, videos, like articles, and like more, like you head over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to all our totally tubular Nerdy Show podcasts via the iTunes store. And for the latest news, follow us on all your favorite social networks. Yay!